Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Oi, what's the best game where you get to eat pie? What's the best game where you play a dead guy? Aye, you'll find out on VG247's podcast. Here, what's the best game where you swing from a rope? And what's the best game where you batter the Pope?
Assassin's Creed 2.
Like I said, you will find out in this your podcast.
Hello and welcome to VG247's Best Games Ever podcast, the podcast where we try and find the best game within a really specific category. For example, this week, inspired by the imminent or recent release of Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, we want to find the best game that comes on multiple discs. Joining us today, we've got Connor Macker, Kelsey Rayner, and Alex Donaldson, the Final Fantasy guy. Because I imagine that his intrinsic knowledge of multi-disc games is probably absolute. So really interesting to see which one he goes for and which one I go for after the game is done, because that's the thing we're doing now. I get a pick once everyone is finished, and everyone else gets to tear it apart like I've been doing to theirs for the past year or so, which is some form of karma. A form of karma that we will be charging for at some point, so enjoy it while it's free. All right, okay, we've got a lot to get through. So, firstly, because, Donaldson, I don't think you've been on for a few weeks. Or did I say this to you last time?
Well, I mean, it depends on whenever we record. It's always been a while since we've recorded, because usually, I think we're only doing one today, right? But usually, sorry to break the illusion, but we do multiple at once.
Yeah.
And I've obviously, for the last, like, 2.5 weeks being in the review minds for Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, which is 2 discs and 150 gigabytes. It's very big, and my completed save file is 109 hours,
okay,
something like that. It's a very long game. It's been a very brutal review period, not helped by the fact that for some reason, inside baseball, but for some reason, European copies of the game were sent out a full week after the Americans got it, so we were playing hardcore catch-up. Thanks for that, guys.
It's not fair.
It is what it is. You can't complain too much because they're giving you free and early access to the game.
I mean,
But when you end up with these regional discrepancies, it can be really frustrating, and it can affect the quality of your reviews because you don't have as much time for stuff to settle. So, but that gripe aside, so I really grounded out, and it was one of those where I was going to bed at 2 a.m., 3 a.m. every night, which probably to younger people without children doesn't sound like that big a deal, because when I was Kelsey and Connor's age, I would regularly do that for reviews and it would be no issue. But now, with wife and puppies and children, if you don't finish till 2 a.m., you do still get up at 7.
Yeah.
Because the rest of your life just batters the crap out of you. So it's been a busy couple of weeks. So yeah, I haven't had time for podcasting, and it's kind of nice to, to put a time stamp on this, the review's going up this afternoon as we record this. So this is the first thing I'm doing where that is behind me. And I really enjoyed the game, but it's one of those reviews where I am quite glad to see the back of it.
Yeah.
That should be the pull quote.
quite glad to see the back of the review, not the game, to be fair.
Quite glad to see the back of it, 4 stars. So, just to clarify, you're not going to pick Final Fantasy VII Rebirth for this.
No, I've got an interesting pick because, this podcast is not.
It's not for real opinions, is it?
It's not absolute. If I was actually picking the best game that's on multiple discs, it probably would be one of those classic PS1 era. You've sort of got Resident Evil 2 and you've got Final Fantasy 7, 8, 9.
Right.
My mind also wandered to a lot of PC games that shipped on 2 discs. Like, I immediately thought of Command and Conquer and stuff like that. And then I thought about it a bit more and I was like, I know exactly what I want to pick. Actually, if I got it, Have I got? There it is.
I'm pretty sure I can see my pick on that shelf as well.
Right.
Nice.
Now, this didn't actually ship on multiple discs on all platforms, to be fair.
Okay.
So I've got the PS2 version, which did ship on one disc, but my pick is Enter the Matrix.
Oh, wow.
No way.
Which ships on multiple discs on PC for sure, and I think also GameCube.
Yeah.
But, I mean, basically, the reason this game ships on two discs, and this is the reason that I picked it, the reason it ships on... Actually, I think on PC it may have been three discs. But the reason it came to mind is it includes loads and loads and loads of film. So if you don't know, I don't know, if for people who don't know about this game, it's a really bizarre one. Because basically when they were making The Matrix Reloaded and Revolutions, the second and third Matrix films, which they made back to back, they had a third photography unit that worked on the movie that basically was filming... hopefully you can't hear dogs barking. It's a busy day here.
Yeah, we can a little bit, but you could just claim that that's because you're in Birmingham, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly, yeah. Exactly. Sure. Car crashes and dogs barking.
Yeah.
But yeah, so they had a third photography unit working on the films, and basically the Wachowskis had written a bunch of extra material that was sort of extracurricular that took place at the same time around the Reloaded story, and so basically, it's really weird. So, like, at the start of The Matrix Reloaded, that movie opens with the captains of the various ships having a meeting in The Matrix, and Morpheus and Neo and Trinity, them and their ship, is the last to turn up to the meeting, and everyone's like, you're late, we've been going for ages. And that's the perspective in the movie. In the game, you're there at the start of the meeting, and so you have, like, this five-minute scene with real actors on the real sets that, you know, leads up to the moment they walk in, and then they walk in. It's sort of, it's fascinating because in many ways it's like the biggest budget FMV game ever made, because obviously yeah. they were able to use all of the sets and all that sort of stuff, even some of the effects, and obviously the stars as well. So it's like Jada Pinkett Smith cast as Niobe, right. one of the captains, and Morpheus's ex-partner and all that sort of stuff. And she plays a big role in Reloaded, and well, a medium-sized role in Reloaded, and an even bigger size role in Revolutions. But she's one of the two dual protagonists of this game, and so every time it goes to a real life cutscene, it is Jada Pinkett Smith, and the version, like I say, I just picked up the PS2 version off the shelf because it was the first one I saw. But the one that I had as a kid that definitely shipped on two discs was the GameCube version. Not sure about the other versions, but GameCube obviously had those small GD ROMs.
I love that. It's fine.
Yeah, so it is a multi-disc game, but it wasn't on everything. But it just depended on the disc size. But yeah, it's just, I just love that basically the only reason that is a video game where the video game part easily fits on one disc, but because they were shipping this DVD quality cinematic stuff on the disc as well, and it's not like it's an extra, it's tied in, it's webbed into the game. And actually, in some ways, the story of Reloaded in particular does make sense in the film, but it doesn't make 1,000% sense actually unless you play the game. And you sort of, like, again, a really good example is they have the car chase down the freeway, which in my opinion is probably the best car chase in cinematic history. It's that of the Blues Brothers, right? And and they have that chase down the highway, and at the very end Niobe turns up out of nowhere and rescues Morpheus. And obviously in the game you play the moments of her finding out they're in danger, her getting on the freeway herself and trying to catch up, so there's a driving stage leads up to that moment, and then a level ends and you sort of see that happen from her perspective. I just, it's so good, and it's so cool, and it's so unique, and it's astonishing to me that no one has made an attempt to do something like this again. So it's sort of like, you know, you think about Star Wars, right? And you think about Disney's built some standing sets for things like Mandalorian and Ahsoka, and they've obviously got all their volume stuff, and in volume they've got all the backgrounds that they can just project for certain scenes, certain planets, whatever. And it's sort of astonishing to me that no one's gone, you know what? What we should actually do is film a bunch of real of live action cutscenes and make use of their sets. I think part of it is because games now have obviously got so much more. The level of fidelity has risen so much.
Right.
You know, they the level of fidelity has gone up so much that there's an argument that you don't actually need to do real-time stuff. Like, there's a Command & Conquer Spiritual Successor on Steam. It's not out yet, but it had a demo out, and I forget what it's called now. Really quite nice, though. But that the cutscenes in that are totally the Command & Conquer cutscenes, but they've done them all in Engine because the facial animation and stuff is so good. But part of me is like, I want that campiness on a set that looks like it's from 80s Star Trek that's wobbling and is a bit crap.
Yeah.
And, you know, Reloaded is that, but it isn't that because, like I say, it was all done to literal Hollywood quality. And it's sort of mad for me. It's mad to me, actually, that in all the reissues of the Matrix series and stuff like that, they've never just put out the cutscenes from this game on a disc.
Yeah, so playing that game is the only way you can watch this stuff, right?
Yeah, yeah. And it's one of those. And actually, so when Matrix Resurrections came out a couple of years ago, I went on a big Matrix kick. I was a big fan of those films.
Yeah,
like it's blasphemous to say, but when you're talking cinematic trilogies of that time, I was always far more interested in The Matrix than Lord of the Rings, which is not, you know, and that isn't to say, I think the first Matrix film is a better film than any of the Lord of the Rings films, if I'm being honest. But obviously I know the sequels are deeply flawed, but I went on a huge Matrix kick.
Not a single cool flip in Lord of the Rings.
Exactly. Well, you got, and when they do cool stuff, it's sort of camp.
It's a bit fucking rubbish,
like when Legolas does his,
the big elephant thing.
Yeah,
I'm thinking about. I don't know if that's Lord of the Rings or Hobbit, when he like does a skateboard grind down a banister or whatever.
When Lord of the Rings did cool stuff, it was still a bit Radio 4, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But basically, you know, I went on a huge Matrix kick, and so I watched all three films back, like literally, I think three times. As long as I'm going to absorb all the details before I watch the new one, which I liked. I liked Resurrections too. So
it's fucking great.
A lot of people didn't. And
greatest epilogue of all time.
This is a game that is not like readily available anymore. So it was like, oh, I've got to go to one of the abandonware sites and download the disc rips and install the PC version in order to see these scenes and play this game.
Right, but...
And the game bit is, I'm not going to pretend like it's game of the year material, but it's a good, fun, third-person action game with the Matrix slow-mo and the stuff you want. And a lot of games from that era really do not hold up, and I think it holds up just fine. So yeah, I mean, Enter the Matrix, like I say, only multiple. Well, I don't know. I'm not sure about PC, but definitely on GameCube. I checked that before I came on. I found a secondhand copy on eBay and was like, "Yep, there was a black disc and a silver disc, and you had to change discs halfway through."
Makes a lot of sense. Yeah, nice. Enter the Matrix. Yeah, that's a good pick. That is a good. I was not expecting that.
No, it's a sick pick.
Like, especially so because, like, the reason it's two discs is
that's the thing I love about it.
Because it's a Wachowski thing as well. It's just like every aspect of this production is over the top.
Well, they love video games as well, and you can tell that they love video games and they wanted to do their Matrix video game right. And I think the example that people talk about now when they talk about that is they talk about the Path of Neo game, which was the game that just sort of recreated the films, and those were all in Engine cutscenes.
Yeah.
But obviously they do a very interesting, fun, silly thing at the end of that game, which is quite famous now. But I actually think the better example of how you can see how they love video games is in the sheer nature of what Enter the Matrix is.
Putting so much effort into like the having like film footage in that game is really wild. Especially, you mentioned Star Wars, when you consider like the equivalent that came to mind of Star Wars was the Fortnite thing, where the Emperor says a message to the galaxy in one season of Fortnite, and then he goes away, and that's just like gone forever. And that's kind of like a cheap whatever quote. But like having all that actual film footage, have it like interlinked with the film, kind of proves that they must care about the medium in some degree, right?
Yeah.
That's cool.
Well, they wanted video games to be actually a part of their story as opposed to here's a thing off to the side.
Enter the Matrix is canon, version. Right? And like it's actually canon. And like even the Matrix Online was considered to be like the actual official canon extension of the story. I'm not sure that Resurrections actually counted any of it.
You know what? It actually sort of leaves it vaguely open in the sense that like, the big thing that happens...
It doesn't tell you how Morpheus died, right?
Well, the big thing that happens in The Matrix Online is that Morpheus dies, right? That's the big thing. And then the truce sort of breaks down. And both those things do happen
in
The Matrix Online. I've just looked. It's over an hour of cutscenes. So they basically... It's an hour and 16 minutes. So it's a good... 50% of Reloaded the film.
It's pretty much Matrix 1.5.
And they sort of do the thing of they clearly didn't have access to everyone all the time, but they sort of make sure it's like, right, we can get Hugo Weaving for like an afternoon. So we'll get our Hugo Weaving scene for the video game here. But then it's like, oh, the twins who weren't particularly famous people who played the ghost guys. It's like, oh, yeah, we can get them for quite a long time, so they'll be quite significant antagonists for the game and stuff like that.
Those guys, the only thing I ever saw them in other than The Matrix was world famous for dicking around. Do you remember that Scottish jackass? It was like a bunch of guys in Fife who would like hurt themselves to get on telly.
No, I've never heard of that. It's perfect. I need to see it.
It was launched. Yeah, it's called World Famous for Dicking Around. It was on like Bravo or Men and Mortars or something, and it was like... It was like, they were like the fucking Blazing Squad. There was like fucking 15 of them, these guys in this shitty little town in Fife. And it was like, this is the British jackass. These guys are going to make it. And then Dirty Sanchez launched like 2 weeks later and completely pulled the rug out from under them. None of those guys are famous anymore. So.
Were they on that before Matrix or after Matrix? Please say before The Matrix.
After.
That's a bit sad.
It was definitely after because they were like,
they were plucked from obscurity.
Yeah,
and then put immediately.
Do you remember
back
the rumor that they were the two guys from Bros?
No.
There was a rumor that they were the Bros twins, and everyone was like, "Fuck God!" And it was purely based on the fact that one of them is now an actor.
When I was young, I thought they were from Korn, the band. But that's not true.
Not Korn the mint. Right, okay.
Last thing I want to say that I love about this, by the way, is that at that time there were loads of people. The Matrix was really cool, right? So loads of celebrities wanted to be in The Matrix. And they gave a lot of celebrities like crappy cameos and Reloaded. But a lot of them actually have roles and line reads in Enter the Matrix. You've got like, there's boxers and NFL players and people like that who are amazing. Playing Matrix guys who they gave, they gave a trench coat and sunglasses. and a lot of those guys they're just standing in the background in the film, but they get their moment to do some really ropey acting in the video game, which I appreciate a great deal.
Fantastic.
I love it. That's amazing. That's like they had their little moment in the sun. Okay, cool. Right, who do I want to hear from next? I actually know what you guys have picked. So, Kelsey, what have you picked?
Okay, so I have gone for a game that I'm technically still playing. Mm-hmm. So please don't completely spoil the ending for me. I know what happens, but I don't know the finer details. And I also think it's a game that might have inspired our pilot episode for this podcast.
Oh.
If I remember correctly.
You are
correct. And that is
correct.
Red Dead Redemption 2. I've been playing this at the moment because I'm obviously doing a big guides overhaul for the website and I'm currently on the epilogue and I've just been blown away by it and I wanted a good excuse to talk about it and this is exactly that. Obviously the main thing about Red Dead Redemption 2, which has had me so hooked, is its story and its characters. It's emotional, it's intense, it's honestly quite miserable, but there's no denying that it is thoroughly entertaining. And these characters, Dutch, Arthur, obviously, John, all of them, like, you will love them, you'll loathe them, and ultimately, like, you'll mourn them in a way and what they could have been. And that is the thing that's kind of got me gripped most. It's what is going to happen to these people at the turn of the century when the Wild West is sort of coming to the end. How are these people being affected? How are they dealing with it? And then on top of that, something that I found very fascinating about it is how much it's kind of educated me in a way, or at least inspired me to go and educate myself. I've noticed as I've been playing that obviously a lot of this is based on real life historical events. Even the Stranger missions and side quests, which are things to do with like finding UFOs or finding vampires and witchcraft and stuff like that. All these little things that might seem out of place that actually, when you look back at history in the late 1800s, they're not out of place whatsoever. These were very big concerns and interests for people at the time. And it's that and how it all comes together to make this world that is so thorough and so lived in that has just really, really blown me away. And the amount of times where it's like I've gone off and Googled something that I've run into because I want to see what the actual historical impact of that was and how the historical events really played out. Stuff like the invention of the electric chair and things like that. There's side quests about that. And it's just so, so, so deeply interesting beyond the emotional main story, which is obviously what everyone goes to Red Dead for. And that's it. There's just so much to it that I found myself both overwhelmed and so, so impressed by this experience. And obviously it is slow. It is very, very cinematic. At times it's I kind of feel like and wish I was watching a Western movie more so than playing the game, because driving around, riding on that horse for ages can become so tiresome. But at the same time, I think that works in the game's favor. I think that's kind of how you're supposed to feel. And it is, it's phenomenal. It's absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah, and you kind of feel like you kind of feel the sore joints at some point, right? Like,
yeah, especially obviously like spoilers in case anyone hasn't already played it. Obviously, Arthur gets ill in the later half of the game, and especially then it's kind of like I feel fatigued in a way, but it's from like obviously how long the game is at times, especially those long traveling segments. But it's also like you really, really do get into this character in Arthur and what he's all about. And obviously you get to determine what he's all about. Is he a big bad guy, or is he actually going to be an honorable bloke around the Wild West? And how people treat him really comes out as a result of that. And I found that very fascinating as well. But all in all, I think it's an incredibly special game. I think not only is it entertaining in and of itself, but I think the fact that it is to an extent educational and encourages people to go and educate themselves on these real historical events is fantastic. It's not something that you come across often, but not super often, and not in this way. And like, this is a period of history that I was never really taught about at school, so it has been really, really satisfying to go and like dig into. But yeah, it's just brilliant.
It's a brilliant game. I love it. It's what,
and it was
I
on
think
two discs.
It did come on two discs, and it was I remember people complaining about that as well. They were like, it's 2017 or whatever it was. It's 2017 and we're still having to do that. Well, yeah,
there's quite a few PS4 games that were like that, yeah. Right?
Yeah. It's an enormous game. Enormous undertaking. There's people are still discovering things in it now, I think.
Yeah.
Like there's still Reddits where people are trying to find all the secrets and all that, you know.
It took every part of me to not go ahead and pick Silent Hill 2 for this. But after looking at Silent Hill 2, I realized one was the game disc and one was the behind the scenes disc. So I was I don't think that counts.
No, yeah. It counts. Oh, like cool extra bonus pick, that actually counts for sure. 100%. Like cool extra bonus content.
I miss stuff like that. Like even just having the leaflets in the the game box, even just having leaflets and stuff. I want those
back.
My
picks back in play. Yes.
This
right.
might be total waffle, but I remember one of my favorite games when I was younger. This isn't what I picked, was Gears of War 3. The like a collector's edition box had like a disc that I think had like art on it. Yeah. I think that stuff is just rad. I thought it was rad then, and it's rad now.
I know, not to disparage. I am gonna slightly disparage them, but yeah, I don't mean to. Not to disparage people who worked on Gears of War, who are incredibly talented people, but I just imagine Cliffy B sitting there with crayons, you know. but yeah, so yeah, like Red Dead Redemption 2, for my like, I love Rockstar games,
yeah,
and for my money it's their best. It's their like everything that studio, everything they ever did as a firm, just built to Red Dead Redemption 2, and I'm not sure they'll ever hit that high again.
It's so, so thorough, yeah. And that's absolutely blown me away. When I first ran into that vampire little Easter egg, I was a bit like, a vampire in Red Dead? This feels so randomly out of place, out of nowhere.
Yeah, yeah.
But then you go back and look at the history and look at like the main pieces of vampire media were, I think there was Carmilla in the 1870s and there's Dracula in the 1890s, which is when Red Dead 2 is set. And it's like, actually, this makes perfect sense. Of course people are going to be like vampire fanaticals and whatever. Same with UFOs.
It's the
things like that. It's actually so intrinsically like supposed to be there.
it's a very creepy game, isn't it? I mean, you love horror, and like it's like Red Dead 2 is not a horror game, but there's so much stuff in there that's genuinely unsettling in that old-timey kind of freak show way.
Yeah, I've had this conversation with James. I think it was kind of like chapter 3 onwards when you go into Saint Denis and some of the events after that, with Braithwaite Manor and things. Like it feels genuinely spooky and creepy at times. And especially if you go off the beaten track and obviously explore those stranger missions and these little Easter eggs, things get even creepier. And it surprised me, because I've seen plenty of like Red Dead Redemption 2 footage over the years, but I didn't expect it to do that, because I'd never actually seen anything quite like it. And then I went and explored and was like, whoa, there's definitely something for everyone here if you can make your way past that very, very slow prologue.
It's so good.
Are you the sort of Red Dead player, this is interesting to me, who plays like an honourable person, like you mentioned earlier? Or are you one of the people who tie up people and leave them on train tracks?
I'm sort of in the middle. It's kind of like I'll do whatever I kind of feel like doing at that time, but I am trying to be as honourable as possible, because I know how that influences the ending, and I guess I want the more positive ending.
This game.
You want to have a good Arthur, but also tie people up and leave them on a train track.
Already now,
as
I'm at the epilogue, a part of me is like, I kind of want to go back and play this whilst being the shittiest person I can possibly be. Yeah. So, and then there we go.
In terms of like the kind of game that is, that just that open world sort of GTA clone, it's unassailable. All right, okay. Let's move on. Connor, what have you got?
You know, two good picks. It's usually at this point in the podcast I would try and make fun of the other picks, but it's been a really good selection.
Can I just say as well, before you get properly into it, when we said what the topic was, Connor was immediately in my DMs going, I need to give you this before Donaldson picks it.
Yeah. So. It's a fantastic game, but before I get into it, Tom isn't here, sadly. So I thought I would take up the mantle of the storyteller this time around.
Oh, come on.
And this time it
isn't
a story from like years ago about like Audi or whatever. This is a story that happened this Monday. Lots of Discs is great. I like Lots of Discs. It's a bit inconvenient, but I think it's quite a nice little, I don't know. I like the more discs, the better. It's like a weird thing of my brain, I guess. But we have to be conscious of the environmental impact of it.
Yeah.
And the fact that it does create a lot of trash. As some of you may have guessed at home, I have a lot of trash just on the floor in my room. Just like reaching down on my desk.
What?
Here's a bottle of hooch.
Oh my God.
So I have a lot of trash on my desk. And this Monday at like midnight, I had a bit of a panic because I'd done my big room clear and I couldn't find my wallet anywhere. My wallet contains my debit card, my work card, my ID, all of my sort of gift cards and loyalty cards, right? So it was a big deal. And I had the full room clear, everything. And I realized it's not in any of my pockets, it's not in any of my clothes, it's not on the ground, it's not on my desk where a wallet would be. There's only one place it could be, which is in the trash outside my house. So at 1 a.m. this Monday, I shirtless went outside the house and started digging through my trash.
Why shirtless? Just
because it was 1 a.m. and I was shirtless in my room.
Hang on, is it not freezing though? 1 a.m.
It was freezing cold.
This man does not care.
So I pulled out two, like, we have a shop near us, it's like a UK brand called One Stop. I pulled out two One Stop plastic bags filled with trash. And I started rummaging through it in the garden. I did find my wallet.
Imagine
it was there.
Looks out the window though and sees a shirtless man rummaging through the bins.
That is the conclusion of the story. You totally predicted it. My neighbor, who's a nice guy, Peter, he's like a programmer, he's like 50 something, turned on the light in his back garden, obviously hearing me rummage through the garbage at 1 a.m. And he saw me go through the garbage, and I had to. I say,
and initially, because the security light was reflecting off your back, he was like, "Whoa!"
Yeah, I looked like some sort of like He must have thought it was like a cat or something, but like it was me.
Fuck cat.
Yeah,
him. At all.
Yeah, so I said sorry. I wake you up, and he said no. I wondered if it was like something going through my garbage. I said, no, it was me. It was my own rubbish. So I found my wallet. I washed it off. Great, but it made me, among all the deeply sort of like distressing, embarrassing thoughts going through my head, it did make me appreciate the sheer amount of rubbish we go through. And with this podcast topic, I was like, we have to pick the game with the most discs possible, surely, to kind of reflect this, to reflect this sort of topic and the sort of the spirit of what I was feeling at the time, which is why my pick is Lost Odyssey.
Yeah, I did think about this one. Yeah.
A game, a fantastic, fantastic, fantastic RPG.
Yeah.
One of the best, not Final Fantasy, Final Fantasy of all time. Anytime I see it on Twitter, it's a retweet on site. It's fantastic. I think it's on sale on Xbox now for like £3. Brilliant.
It runs really well on series.
Runs really well. I think the original game...
I might get it if it's like £3.
Yeah, on the original Xbox when I played it, I think I remember there being like long loading times and stuff because the game is just packed full of so much good stuff.
Yeah.
You know, the Xbox 360, the technology at the time couldn't handle it. It was too good. Now it's amazing.
I'm pretty sure when Lost Odyssey came out, you didn't have the install every game option as well. So
you got to certain points disc. And you had to eject your disc and you had to put the second disc back in. It had four discs on it and each disc had a face of a character on it and it was great. Lost Odyssey is a really emotional, fantastic RPG. It's got a great battle system where you got a sort of like time when a ring kind of closes up. At a certain point, it's like a quick time event kind of, but you get bonus damage if you match it.
Mm-hmm.
Story, fantastic. Especially as I've gotten older and I appreciate what it is like to forget things, including family members. the story of Lost Odyssey is, you know, amazing. Amazing cast of characters. The English voice acting is astounding. The soundtrack, turbo good. Constant bangers all the time, amazing battle theme. It's just dope. And I think like for four discs, you can't get much better. Bonus story, when I was a teenager, I had my 360. I had a 360 arcade, which was crap. But I had it for so long that I dodged the red disc, like the red ring of death issue. But I had it for so long that the disc drive stopped working.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to like hack at it with screwdrivers and like manually pull the disk drive open and then close it shut, which worked for a while. But it did eventually mean that I could no longer play my favorite games at the time, which were Lost Odyssey and Dead Space 2 came on two discs as well. That was gonna be my backup game.
I actually love that. That's so you.
You know, Lost Odyssey is a game that I've had throughout my life, has been in my mind throughout many difficult moments, be it force opening my Xbox 360 or rummaging through garbage. And I think that, like, it's a fantastic game on the most discs. So, you know.
Yeah.
Four isn't that many, though. Four is only the same number as discs. I thought you were going to find a game that came on, like, 12 discs or something.
There's
like
seven,
that.
Two.
I can remember a few of them.
Is there a game that came on 12 discs?
Yeah, 100%.
There must be some sort of, like, I suppose...
I feel like EverQuest was, like, 10 or 12 CDs.
EverQuest 2, 10 CDs. Black Dahlia with 8 CDs. I played that. Yeah, speaking of Black Dahlia, I'm surprised that nobody has brought up Ripper, starring Christopher Walken, the classic FMV game that came
Omicron.
On 6 CDs. I fucking played
Omicron,
that.
Omicron, bro.
So good. It was terrible, but it was great.
Riven came on 5 discs.
Wow.
With regards to Lost Odyssey, I want to say the thing that I associate Lost Odyssey with when it comes to coming on multiple discs is the Western version came in a bullshit box where... rather than have like a book style thing with the multiple discs, you would just have four discs on one giant spindle.
One big spindle.
The discs were touching each other. And I remember very vividly, I got sent a review copy of that game because I'm that old, and that came like that. And I ordered the Asian copy because the Asian copy was the only one that came like that.
Oh, nice.
That's interesting.
Like,
it was the only one that came properly.
Because I remember when I bought Lost Odyssey, we were on like a seaside like little mini holiday with a family. And I used to buy old games like that were like cheap from Game or whatever, or Game Station, for like £2 or £3 or whatever, like cheap stuff. And I remember buying Lost Odyssey, and we had to almost immediately take it to like disc repair because it was a pre-owned pre-owned Lost Odyssey, which means the discs that were at the top of the pile were scratched to pieces.
I love the idea that Lost Odyssey was essentially like retail copies of Lost Odyssey were like one use, one playthrough, and then it self-destructs. These are really good picks. And now I've got to pick one. So we've got three like pretty incredible multi-disc games, actually. My job has been made incredibly hard by this. Right, first of all, Connor.
Mm-hmm.
Lost Odyssey, is it not a bit long-winded?
I mean, no, not as compared
how
to
long,
like...
How long is Lost Odyssey? Your answer is...
I think it's like 90, 100 hours. Like, it's a RPG, it's a long RPG, and it's like bonus extra stuff you can do. But like, it's not as long as Red Dead Redemption 2, you know, which is and no disrespect, the most boring game I've ever played in my entire life.
I think it is longer than Red Dead Redemption 2.
Didn't you describe Red Dead Redemption 2 as like tiring?
And yeah, like, it is made a little
bit tiring. It made you feel like old cowboy.
You're supposed
with, what
to
did he
feel
have,
like that, though.
On the brink of death.
Tuberculosis.
Yeah, you're supposed to feel like that. You know, you really need to step into Arthur Morgan's shoes, but Arthur Morgan. Red Dead Redemption 2, if you do the story and no side quests, is between 50 to 60 hours. I think I'm on the epilogue now and I'm on about 62 hours.
Just like thinking of the life choices as you stare wistfully at a realistic depiction of a horse's cock and balls.
Like, I do love how a lot of that game is just like people telling Arthur to do some really shitty stuff and
it's
him
just Dutch going, I have a plan. Yeah. I have a plan. Loyalty. Yeah. And it's like, please stop. Please shut up. It's like,
sounds a lot of fun.
Arthur, you have to go and be really horrible to someone. And he's like, yeah, guess you're right. And he's really sad about it. But he does
That's
it anyway.
That's part of the fun. Yeah.
And then he dies. And it's good. But yeah, so, oh shit, I'm not supposed to say that.
I know that.
Wow.
You can't, it's been 6 years since the game released. You can't avoid the fact that Arthur Morgan dies.
I can't believe Jim spoiled it.
I spoiled it for everyone. I'm leaving it in, fuck it, why not?
Game shit anyway, who cares?
Listen, it's not
you
a shit
not
game.
Just say
it's
that.
It's one of the greatest of all time. Enter the Matrix, you know, I really love, I love your reasons for its multi-discness being why it's your pick, but it's proper 6 out of 10 though, isn't it, as a game?
I think it's more like a high
5 out of 10.
a high seven.
It's a high seven.
It's decent. I mean, okay. I've actually replayed it quite recently. I mean, Path of Neo is better, but compared to some of the licensed shit that got put out then, it is a perfectly serviceable sort of what was that game called? Stranglehold.
Sort of
that before it was Stranglehold before they did Stranglehold in a way.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Rest in peace, Shiny Entertainment.
Well, speaking of 360s, I always remember Stranglehold as the game I was playing when I got my first Red Ring of Death. It was the Hong Kong bit and it just killed it. Oh, the Kowloon bit, sorry. Yeah. Anyway, all right, okay. I am going to go with I don't know if people are going to be upset with me in the comments or whatever, but I'm going to go with Red Dead because I just think it's just I've already described it as unassailable. I just think it's that good.
But it's so saleable.
It's
winning my first podcast of the year. Let's go.
I mean, congratulations. This isn't your fault, girls, but like, it's just the most, like, I guess you and every other middling like internet commentary douchebag.
Connor's about to go and dig through his rubbish again.
I don't have to. There's enough trash on my screen
on
right now.
On the last episode, I went off on one about how, like, when Connor wins, he's, like, really fucking smug about it.
I haven't gone off on one
raging.
In ages. I haven't gone off on one in ages. I've not been mad in ages. I've calmed down.
You've won loads of times and you're happy.
I've lost stuff and been like, that's fair, that's fine. This is absurd.
It's always me. It's always when you come against me, like, right? I need some tantrum now. This can't happen.
You know, not, like that thing, every time Connor loses, he turns into fucking Sephiroth, right?
That's very nice of you, I suppose. Like, my God. I mean, hey, I guess if you like movies, but, it's yeah. Dead is one of and the look, best movies. And
Donaldson is like tired of winning at this point. So, you know, this is like a relatively new experience
it for him.
He's just picking cool games he thinks he's got a kind of neat. He's like, oh, if I win, I win, whatever.
Yeah, but, like, because he's got a lead that like it's going to take us 20 years of doing this podcast for anyone to match. So, right. Okay. All right. Red Dead Redemption 2 is the best game that shipped on multiple discs. I'm going to now pick my pick, and I'm still in two minds. I've got two in my head, but I'll we'll go through it after this horrific theme tune.
I wasn't so insufferable this time. I think because I haven't heard it in a while.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
sort of just bobbed along to that one.
Fondness does make the heart grow. What was the saying?
Fondness makes the heart grow fonder.
It does. I mean, I suppose it does. Jim, what are your picks, man?
You totally George Bushed that then.
My brain.
You can't fool me again.
To be fair to George Bush, that's a sentence that should never be said.
Yeah,
but in that particular instance, people like to say that that clip is him just being boundlessly thick. But what it actually is him actually being quite clever, because it's a politician going, I cannot. He gets halfway through saying that and thinks, I cannot be caught on camera saying the word shame on me.
Yeah.
Especially right. When you've just prosecuted an illegal war. So, you get fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, a fooled man can't get fooled again.
Yeah.
He styled it out, I respect it.
And then all was forgiven because he did some shitty paintings.
Yeah, do you know what, Donaldson? You've actually turned me around on George Bush.
He's like, I'm a Republican now.
Yeah.
All right, okay. It boggles my mind that how fucked everything is that people regard him as a centrist now. But anyway, let's not get into that. Right, I had two picks in mind for this. Right, I'm gonna go. I'll tell you what the one I'm not gonna go with first, which was Oblivion Game of the Year Edition, which is slightly cheating.
Is that the one that comes with BioShock as well?
No, that's it's just the one that comes with Shivering Isles, Knights of the Nine, okay. And all the other DLC we did, including Horse Armor.
Did Shivering Isles ever ship on a disc?
Yes.
I feel like I have a memory of buying Shivering Isles on a disc.
It definitely shipped on a disc.
I don't have it on my shelf looking behind me, so I'm like,
I could have sworn it shipped on its own disc.
Obviously, it wasn't standalone, but...
Yeah. No, it wasn't standalone, but I'm pretty sure you could buy it on a disc. But yeah, the Oblivion Game of the Year Edition had... the one disc was just the usual Oblivion disc, and the second disc was all the DLC that you could install from. You didn't have to download it. And it was... Oblivion's one of the best games of all time. I don't need to explain that. But I haven't gone with that one, because I've gone with one that... nobody will agree is the best game of all time, but it's a special place in my heart. Frontier Elite 2 on the Amiga.
What?
Technically shipped on two discs, right?
I feel very young.
Because you had the game on one floppy disc. Now, it's not just optical discs, right? We called those discs as well back in the day, right? It shipped on one floppy disc, but it also included a second data disc, which had loads of saves and scenarios and stuff. And I'm counting that as shipping on multiple discs, right? And it was also a big box game release that included a really thick manual, a map of the galaxy, a gazetteer, which was like a load of short stories set in the universe, one of which is sequelized in Elite Dangerous, because there's like there's a story about a cyborg bartender who's built into a bar in a space station and eventually buys the entire space station and fits it with hyperdrives and goes exploring the universe as a giant guy. And he's in Elite Dangerous. You can go and find him and dock with him and stuff. And it's wonderful. It's brilliant. But this game...
Connor! you're a disgrace, Connor. I caught that.
Oh, fucking hell. I've just realised what...
if you say so, yeah.
Sounds like that's a gym game.
Favorite.
I mean, it's a space game. Like, I mean, there we go. Like,
of course it's a space game. It's an open game. World. It's one of the first sort of proper big deal. But like, obviously the original open world game is Elite that came out like 10 years earlier. Connor, for fuck's sake.
Sorry, I can't listen to you.
I can't believe I'm thinking it. You ruined this.
This is a game
now.
That is very near and dear to Jim's heart, Connor.
I
played this as a child, and here you are going on about fucking docking.
I didn't say shit. Me. You. Talking about docking with people on this kids friendly podcast. You have sponsors and stuff.
Just imagining sticking Blue Danube on when you do it. Fucking hell. Well, you've ruined that.
I've not ruined
anything.
Open world
space game.
Yeah.
Basically, the Morrowind of its day, the Starfield of its day.
What does that mean? What does that mean?
A big
space
open,
game.
Basically, that whole live another life in another world thing. Frontier had that nailed for 1992, 93.
Yeah.
And I got obsessed with it as a child. It was the first video game I properly got obsessed with. And it kind of informs like all the games I'm into now, really. Like, you can totally look at like, well, why are you into Elder Scrolls? Well, look at Frontier. Fucking, you're just cutting about. I mean, you can never get off the ship in Frontier, but, you know.
Yeah.
Jim's definition of a good game, you get to cut about.
Yeah.
That's it.
Cut about in space.
It's like, are there any better games than ones you get cut about in? That's why I like, you know, we really enjoyed playing Helldivers 2 the other day, and my favourite bit were like, well, you can pick a planet to fly to? Fuck me, this is great. Frontier Elite 2 would be my favourite game that came out on multiple discs, but that's ever so slightly cheating as well. But apart from that, Oblivion is also Oblivion Game of the Year Edition, but you have to specify Game of the Year Edition because it absolutely did not come on multiple discs otherwise. But there we go. I think that's a great the three amazing picks. Actually, I genuinely struggled with that one, but I just find Red Dead Redemption 2 just, I mean, if you compare Red Dead Redemption 2 with most things, it comes out on top, including Dead Redemption 1, which...
Yeah, joking aside, it's like staggeringly made. It's just absurdly big and absurdly detailed and absurdly good.
Rockstar are very good at what they do.
And it is like very specifically like, no, it's one of those games as well. You're like, no other studio could have done that. It's just so, it's extremely them. Well, I remember as well a lot of skepticism when it was announced about, well, maybe not like in like popular discourse, but sort of among friends of mine and stuff. There was a lot of skepticism about whether or not it could, is it even the same Rockstar anymore? Can it possibly be as good as the first one? Which I think at that point a lot of people considered their best game, maybe alongside GT4.
Right.
Probably the Sood's choice for favourite Rockstar game. And it absolutely blows the first game away, which is insane because the first game is still like up there. But it does everything that the first game does but better, which is like, you know, perfect video game sequel, right? So yeah, wonderful. Thank you very much for that, guys. Thank you very much for listening. If you would like to leave us a 5-star review on the podcast app of your choice, please do. And leave us a comment, tell us what you would have picked, and we'll no read it, or leave a comment having a weird like rant about Tom telling a story, because we'll definitely read that.
We read
funny.
Them all.
All the comments will be about docking this week now.
Yeah, I want to see ample comments about Jim's childhood infatuation.
You know, there's a lot of stuff I don't quite understand Tom's job, but there's a lot of stuff he has to put in reports that go to his bosses. you know, every time we tweet, every time, you know, we say something publicly on a video or whatever, there's a lot of stuff that gets sort of like, and what did Jim mean by that when he said that? So this is going to be a fun one for Tom to explain at some point later in his life, which is great.
I can't wait for the end of year, like, company-wide, like, video call, like, recap, where we have to put that clip is going in. And every single writer at Gamer Network and everyone else in the wider company will have to see you save it.
Well, I didn't say it. What I said was innocent, Connor.
No, it wasn't at all.
It was your fucking reaction to it.
I didn't say anything. I had a giggle about
something. They won't know
something.
What docking is.
Yeah, it's true. They have no idea.
That's true.
Can you imagine Bertie even having no. that in his head anywhere, you know? I can't. He's such an innocent soul. Anyway, all right, we better shoot off. But thanks for that, everyone. Bye.
Bye.
Everyone wave.
Bye.
Everyone wave at the people.
Bye.